When I moved here, one of the things that people told me I should be sure to do, because it was relatively close at hand, was to go visit the Clark Art Museum in Williamstown, Massachusetts. It's about an hour and a half drive from here, something like that. You're all nodding in yes, that's what I should do, okay? Excellent. I'm glad I did as I was told. I've only made it there a couple of times. Actually, it turns out that right now is a great time to visit because admission is free for everyone this month through the end of the month, through the 31st. So head ye to the Clark and take in some art. I like art. I don't really know a whole lot about it. I don't know art history, really. I don't really know anything about painting techniques or any of that stuff. When I headed over there, I knew that they had some famous works and they had some paintings by people that whose names I would recognize. So, okay, I guess I was ready for that. What I didn't expect was that my favorite painting in the place would be a painting of onions and a clove of garlic. Normally, I'm pretty attentive when I go through a museum. It takes a lot of patience to go through a museum with me. I read all of the things. But this time, I kept returning to this painting. I just kept going back to it over and over again and just standing in front of it. Onions by Pierre-Auguste Renoir. Every time I look at it, it feels like it's new. I'm seeing something different in it. The way the onions seem to shine, not just with reflected light, but a light that's like coming right out of them somehow. And I know it's a still life painting, so there's nothing moving in it, but there's so much motion and activity in the painting. The onions are just dancing around on that dish towel there, whatever it is. There's one that's kind of broken from the pack, but is leaning back in towards the others. It's just so dynamic, and I keep seeing new things in it all the time. And after the service, I'd love to hear what you see in it. It just feels kind of endlessly amazing to me somehow. Just those onions painted that way. I guess I was having the sort of experience that James Weldon Johnson describes in his poem Before a Painting. The artist had created life and love and art on canvas from mere color, curve, and line, and Johnson describes being transfixed. The poet's voice somehow silenced as he mutely gazed upon that face divine. The experience is a spiritual, religious one, and he likens it to falling to your knees in prayer and feeling a connection to a glory that is so much greater than oneself. The reason that we have art museums is because we humans want to be sure there's a place where we know there's some awe that we can go experience. The regular experience of awe is something that we human beings need. And more there's scientific evidence being added to the kind of common sense evidence I think we all feel in our bones about this. It turns out that the human critter is healthier, more positive, more generous, more thoughtful, more compassionate when that critter experiences awe. I love it when any of you share articles and books and stuff with me. One of you shared with me a New York Times article recently called How a Bit of Awe Can Improve Your Health, subtitled, Experts Say Wonder is an Essential Human Emotion and a Salve for the Turbulent Mind. The author's main resource in this piece is a new book by a scientist named Dr. Keltner, K-E-L-T-N-E-R. And the book that Keltner just published is called Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. And I really recommend it. Awe can transform your life. These are big claims being made about just this little feeling that humans experience. I suppose if we are a religious people who start with the belief that there is a God, these claims about awe and being transformed by awe might feel especially commonsensical, because God is, of course, awe-inspiring. And if you let yourself experience that awe and practice experiencing that awe, you will be transformed. But some of us are religious people who do not start with the belief that there is a God. But it turns out that even if you just start considering the human animal and asking, what does that critter need to be healthy and to feel fulfilled, you still come to awe as one of the most important things. Keltler uses this definition of awe. Awe is the feeling of being in the presence of something vast that transcends your current understanding of the world. The feeling of something vast that transcends your current understanding. When I stood at the edge of the Grand Canyon, I experienced a vastness that transcended, that's maybe too gentle a term, busted, just blew away my then conception of what the world is. But vastness doesn't have to be literal, like big vastness. There's microscopic vastness too. Maybe you've seen the photographs of snowflakes made by the 19th century photographer and Vermont farmer Wilson Bentley. I think we've talked about those before here. Takes these lovely pictures, these little teeny crystal shapes, every single one of them different. There's a vastness in that smallness and delicateness, too. It turns out there are all kinds of ways that we can experience vastness. Keltner studied people from all around the world, people from all different races and religions, different cultures, different economic stations, different political orientations. Taking in all of that data from all the people all over the world, the thing that moved people to awe most wasn't art, and it wasn't music, it wasn't nature. Yeah, that one got you, didn't it? It wasn't nature. It was what Keltner calls moral beauty. He says, around the world, we are most likely to feel awe when moved by moral beauty. It's when we see exceptional virtue, character, or ability. Moral beauty, he says, operates by an aesthetic marked by a purity and goodness of intention and action, which moves us to awe. So that's why I showed you the video of Andra Day there, of a song called Rise Up. There is actually, if you go on YouTube and search for it, there's more than one official music video for Rise Up. This is the one labeled Inspiration Version. In it, we see a woman and someone we presume to be her partner or spouse. It starts with her seeing a message from her partner saying he wants to take her out on a date. But her partner is apparently paralyzed or something. He doesn't have the use of any of his limbs. So we watch the woman get him up and bathe him and get him ready and wheel him onto the van with this special ramp that's there. She drives to the restaurant. She holds his menu so that he can read it. She feeds him. The whole time during this, they're talking with one another. They're often laughing and smiling at one another. So it isn't just the amazing voice of Andra Day that gives me chills in that particular video. It's looking at the goodness of both the woman and the man. The one facing his condition with apparent ease and good humor, and the other giving such tender, loving care. At one point, when she's walking around the van to get her partner out to wheel him into the restaurant, she passes right by this really attractive young man. Did you notice that? And you thought, well, normally she should be with him, right? She should be with that guy, not stuck with a partner who needs so much caregiving. But no, it's not that she doesn't give him a second look. She barely gives him a first look. She is goodness and character. Coming home from the restaurant, the couple go into this kind of short tunnel or something, under a building or something. I'm not quite sure where they are. But when they pass under the tunnel, for a moment, they enter this dark spot and you can barely see them. And Andra Day is singing over this. And I don't know if you could hear it, but really quietly at that moment, you hear the woman say, "Thank you for taking me out." As they enter the darkness, she says, "Thank you for taking me out." I feel awe in that moment, perhaps especially. It doesn't need to be such an extreme example for us to experience awe. Noticing little acts of kindness is all it takes. I think this will be the third Sunday in a row that I quote from Sharon Salzberg, but, you know, there you go. Salzberg recommends paying attention to your neighborhood bus driver or your grocery clerk, looking for those daily moments of kindness. My wife was telling me as I was working on this sermon, there's sometimes a person at the checkout line that's just so nice. Paying attention, practicing noticing kindnesses when you see them, you can build your capacity for and the facility with which you can experience awe. But why would you want to do that? Why would you want to give yourself over to this experience that can be so kind of overpowering and just take you over? You can lose yourself in it. One of the things that I found most interesting in Keltner's book was this moment when he notes a stereotype that we have about awe. He says, "A stereotype of awe is that it leaves us dumbfounded and dazed, ready to subordinate reason to dogma, disinformation, blind faith, a local guru, or trendy influencer." In those situations where reason is subordinating itself to dogma and such, I don't think what's going on in those situations is actually awe. I think it's something different. I think what's going on in those situations is a feeling that of confidence instead of curiosity, of, I know all the answers, that you are in on the secret, that you hold the trump card. I wonder if he meant that pun. Rev Joe couldn't have meant that pun. He wouldn't do that. Keltner argues that, in fact, and these are Keltner's words, "in the state of wonder that awe produces, our thought is more rigorous and energized." And he points to Isaac Newton and Rene Descartes and the way they were fascinated and awestruck by rainbows. And they started asking some questions and asking more questions and just following their awe. And it leads them into all this kind of groundbreaking work in physics and in mathematics and more. Keltner lets us know that laboratory studies have captured how awe leads to more rigorous thought. In one such study, after being led to experience awe by recalling a time of looking out at an expansive view, college students were more discerning between what is a strong argument grounded in robust scientific evidence and a weak argument based on a single individual's opinion. Look out the window then evaluate the arguments. Why is that? It's because what our experience of awe does is give us an awareness of a larger world, a larger whole, a larger set of systems in which everything takes place. With our thinking energized by awe, Keltner says, we place vast mysteries within more complex systems of understanding. In awe, our minds open in wonder to the systems of life and our small part in them. I was reading this and I think, well, it's like when you experience awe, you're not dumbstruck, you're smartstruck. I like this. Look at all the words and stories and art and poems and journaling and songs that try to give voice to our experiences of awe. They don't seem silenced. We don't seem silenced about it. We seem to talk about it all the time. Setting up institutions all over the place to preserve it and hang on to it and honor it. When we experience awe, we are smart struck. And you can get smart struck simply by connecting with something larger than yourself. There's a new draft of our UU principles that I've mentioned a couple of times. This summer, this congregation gets 3 delegates that we send to the General Assembly, and those delegates will vote on whether or not we're going to use this new draft of our principles. You might want to talk with Terry Lee, Lucy, and Sue Ward, who are your 3 delegates, and tell them what you think about it. That new draft of our principles starts off with love as our central value, talks about love as the central value that we have. Then it lists a bunch of values. And in a previous draft, something else was the first thing that it listed. In the most recent draft, they made this change. They made interdependence next. After love, the thing that comes next is interdependence. We honor the interdependent web of all existence. We need awe. This is one of the most important things for us to remember, to get ourselves to experience. We need to get good at awe. We need more of us to be smart struck. We need to have more of us let go of our egos and get curious about the systems of relationships that everything is caught up in, that everything is dependent on. If awe is the feeling of being in the presence of something vast that transcends your current understanding of the world, we can't clutch on to our current understanding, whatever it is. To be vulnerable to awe, we need to be vulnerable to curiosity, to humility, to active questioning, and mostly to the truth that we are caught up in and perhaps made up of a network of interdependent relationships. Sharon Salzberg defines awe as the absence of self-preoccupation. The absence of self-preoccupation. Keltner talks about not self-preoccupation so much as he talks about something he calls the default mind, the mind that we usually use in our consumerist, competitive, one-upmanship sort of society. He says, our default mind blinds us to this fundamental truth that our social, natural, physical, and cultural worlds are made up of interlocking systems. Experiences of awe open up our minds to this big idea. Awe shifts our minds from a more reductionist mode of seeing things in terms of separateness and independence to a view of phenomena as interrelating and dependent. May we be vulnerable to curiosity and humility. May we be vulnerable to awe and nature and art and moral beauty and music and more. May we give ourselves to be smart struck. May we give ourselves to curiosity and compassion as part of and participants in the interdependent systems of the cosmos. May we wander toward the mysteries and wonders of life. May we be vulnerable to awe. May that be so.